I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Philadelphia Flyers patriarch Ed Snyder has died from complications of bladder cancer at the age of 83. Legendary former Flyers goalie Bernie Perron says Snyder was a great man.
He was a man because of his tremendous vision to have a hockey team, the National Hockey League. His next vision was to win the championship, to win the Stanley Cup. He did everything that he could as an owner to provide the right product, you know, to accomplish those visions.
The Flyers enter the Stanley Cup playoffs Thursday when they face off against the Washington Capitals. Team captain Claude Giroux says Snyder will remain a large part of the team.
The best thing we can do right now is play as hard as we can. And we know it's not going to be easy against a good team, but we know he'll be watching and he'll be cheering us on.
The team says funeral services will be private. There will be a public remembrance ceremony at the Wells Fargo Center in the near future. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to the Ed Snyder Youth Hockey Foundation and the Philadelphia Flyers charities. It's budget season in New Jersey, and some state officials are worried. David Tepper, a self-made hedge fund manager from New Jersey who's worth more than $11 billion, is moving to Florida. WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports that he's taking all the money he pays in state income taxes with him.
In a budget hearing in Trenton last week, a state official said income tax projections could be way off this year if David Tepper were really leaving New Jersey. Tepper reportedly pulls in several billion annually, so if he's being taxed at New Jersey's highest rate, nearly 9%, he could be paying tens or even hundreds of millions in income taxes each year. If he left, New Jersey would lose all of it. Financial journalists had a field day with that idea. Here's a clip from CNBC.
So literally the residents of New Jersey, of which I am one, could see a slight uptick in taxes if the budget remains the same.
Or decline in services.
Or decline in services just because Tepper is moving to Florida.
The Tepper effect, exactly.
The Tepper effect. You know, this is
the Tepper effect. But really, one guy moving away is going to cause a seismic shift in the New Jersey economy so large that the average taxpayer will feel it?
I seriously doubt that one person moving would have a serious impact.
Richard Keevy was the budget director for two former New Jersey governors and teaches at the Blaustein School.
Now, if a whole bunch of those people took off and left the state, that would obviously be a problem.
Keevy says relying on income tax is tough because it's so volatile. What people earn can really depend on what kind of year they had at work and on the stock market.
One year, for example, I think it was in the year 2008 because of the national recession, our income tax dropped $2 billion in one year. And obviously that creates a big budgetary issue as to what we do to fill in that gap.
On the flip side, revenues could smash projections in a good year. 40% of the money New Jersey takes in comes from income taxes. Budget officials said even a 1% forecast error could mean losing $140 million toward the budget. But according to UC Berkeley law professor David Gamage, banking so heavily on income taxes isn't totally uncommon.
New Jersey relies more on income taxes than the typical U.S. state, but not out of bounds for what many large urban blue states, New York, California, Massachusetts, are doing.
How much Tepper made or paid in state income taxes last year can't be disclosed publicly. His company, Appaloosa Management, did not return several requests for comment. Yet, despite the fact that New Jersey's tax structure might be vulnerable to the movements of its most wealthy residents, income tax revenues are actually on the rise in New Jersey, says Moody's analyst Bay Larson.
So despite any inflows or outflows of high-wealth individuals, the state is continuing to grow its personal income and grow its income taxes at a reasonable rate.
Whether that growth sticks around could depend on whether more high earners follow Tepper to Florida. But as long as Wall Street types live just across the river in North Jersey, income taxes will likely continue to rise and fall with the stock market. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Philadelphia Congressman Shaka Fatah is fighting two battles these days. He's facing a federal corruption indictment, and he has three challengers for the nomination to his congressional seat in the April 26th Democratic primary. This morning at our WHYY studios, all four candidates met in a debate that you can hear tonight at 8 on WHYY. It was moderated by our senior reporter, Dave Davies, who joins me now for a taste of what went down. Dave, the big topic looming over this race is that corruption indictment against the incumbent. I've got to assume he was asked about it. What did he have to say?
Yeah, this is interesting, Dave, because the congressman is in a strange position. You know, I mean, he's presumed innocent, as is any defendant. He doesn't have to disprove the government's charges or say anything about them. But voters have to make a decision before the trial. So he was asked quite directly about the central charge in this case. Did somebody provide a secret $1 million sum for use on his 2007 mayoral campaign? He challenged the premise of the question and insisted he was innocent.
The press has not the foggiest idea about these things. You haven't read the allegations, right? You don't know the truth of them. And I look forward to two results. One is the winning the election. And two is to having our opportunity to dismiss these charges.
I'll just quickly add, Dave, that I and other reporters have indeed read the indictment. Also in the debate, you'll hear the congressman defend his record, talk about his work on education, brain research. And at one point, he slipped in that he'd ridden on Air Force One to a presidential announcement, just to remind everybody of his status in Washington.
The best-known challenger is State Representative Dwight Evans. What's the gist of his pitch?
Evans has been around a long time. He's worked on school issues, public safety. He's worked closely with Republicans in the legislature at some points, all of this generating controversy at times. He was well known for bringing state grants to West Oak Lane and developing its commercial corridor. He said he'll use that experience and replicate those accomplishments.
All neighborhoods matter. That's what I've demonstrated. I've written a book called Making Ideas Matter. And I've taken my experience in the neighborhood I've been in and have transformed that particular neighborhood. There's no one on this panel who has transformed the neighborhood. There's no one on this panel who has written a book.
Yeah, so he's proud. Now, if you tune in at 8, you'll hear more. For example, what he has to say about a state audit that was very critical of the management of that community development group he sponsored.
Two additional candidates. Let's start with Dan Muroff. He's an attorney, community leader in Mount Airy, and former president of Ceasefire PA.
Right. He talked about his work on gun control, and when candidates were asked about increasing opportunities for ex-offenders, Muroff told a personal story about his older sister who'd had a substance abuse problem and because of that was burdened by a criminal record.
Every time she tried to write her life and get herself back on course, she found herself with this indelible mark of a criminal record. It was like a sign that said, "Do not hire me." See, I believe in second chances. I don't think that did her any good, my family any good, the community any good. She disappeared in the streets of Philadelphia 19 years ago. Never saw her again.
And Muroff said, we do need an overhaul of the justice system.
And Dave, the district is nearly one-third suburban, with nearly all of Lower Merion included. And Brian Gordon is the only candidate from outside Philadelphia. What do we learn about him?
Yeah, Dave, that part of the district was added after the last census. Brian Gordon said people in the district want a problem solver, and he's somebody who's worked on a bipartisan basis as a commissioner in Lower Merion Township.
I was the lead drafter of Lower Merion's anti-discrimination ordinance and LGBTQ ordinance that protected members of our community, and it was passed unanimously by Republicans and Democrats.
There's more, Dave. You'll hear about what they think about the proposed soda tax in Philadelphia, and they'll share some thoughts about race and politics in this district, which is the only one in Pennsylvania represented by an African-American.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. And yes, this reminder, you can hear that debate in full starting at 8 this evening on WHYY-FM. It's also available in its entirety at our website, newsworks.org. Still ahead, Delaware's decision to administer the SATs as a required test is causing school administrators to rejoice.
We were sitting with our fingers crossed, so when that decision came through, we were cheering.
Now don't forget your number two pencil when NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Take a thermometer to the sun, and you'd get a reading around 27 million degrees Fahrenheit at the core. Now, keep that number in mind as we travel to Quasar 3C273 with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, 27 million degrees. Mighty hot.
27 million, that sounds like a lot. But scientists have been able to identify much hotter material out in the universe. Now, quasar 3C273 is a fairly well-known quasar. We're actually talking about a supermassive black hole at the core of an early galaxy that has an extraordinarily hot jet. Now, in all fairness, the original supposition about jets from black holes is that their temperatures could not possibly exceed 179 billion degrees.
Okay, so 27 million the sun, and yep. Now 179 billion?
Billion with a B. 179 billion degrees. But wait, there's more. As it turns out, they have identified that the jets coming from this particular quasar are really 18 trillion degrees.
No way.
Way. 18 trillion. Now, the original thinking was that when jets like this blow out of supermassive black holes, that there's an interaction between the X-rays that are generated and the gamma rays, or the electrons, between these two. And that interaction would cause these jets to cool off. But in fact, that doesn't seem to be the case at all.
Do scientists have a hunch why there's this disparity between what they thought was 179 billion versus 18 trillion?
Not yet. And so we'll continue to identify phenomena like this that makes our eyes bug out and our heads explode. But the fun thing is that we can ask a question and we can start to dig around to see if we can find an answer.
My eyes are still bugged out from the news last week about the discovery of that huge black hole.
So what we're talking about here is the second largest black hole ever discovered. Now, this particular one that was discovered last week has a mass equal to that of 17 billion suns. That's how massive this thing is. That's how massive it is. So now as a singularity, as a black hole, it's going to be very, 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 very small. But it will have the mass of an object of 17 billion times that of our sun.
Do these discoveries in part help us to get a better potential sense of what the Big Bang moment was like in terms of its energy and its escape velocity?
In a roundabout way, yes. As we see these objects that have these enormous values connected to them, I mean, the 17 billion solar masses, of course you can't. There's no escape velocity that will allow you to get off of a mass like that. Or a supermassive black hole that has jets that have temperatures of 18 trillion degrees. What this tells us is that when we're looking at the Big Bang itself, that point in time where all of the matter, all of the energy, all of the forces are all reduced into one infinitesimally small object, we know that the parameters, the values of anything happening in that have to be beyond comprehension. That temperature of 18 trillion degrees has to be like an ice cube's temperature versus what the temperature of the Big Bang must have been like, or what the density or mass of the Big Bang must have been like, if these are individual objects at 21 billion solar masses. Well, remember, we have to be able to encompass all of the matter of the universe and all of the forces of the universe that we know into this little tiny, tiny, tiny point.
Let's make it a whole lot easier. We have a moment left, and when you step outside at night and look at what looks like a 2D wall print, what can be seen in the night sky?
Thank you. We've come back to something that's concrete and easy to wrap our heads around.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old same thing. Come on, time up without a space.
Tomorrow, Delaware's high school juniors will take a standardized test. That test isn't remarkable. Every year, millions of kids nationwide take statewide standardized tests. Delaware, though, is among a handful of states trying a new exam that many hope will diffuse some of the opposition to standardized tests. Avi Wolfman-Arendt from WHYY's Delaware desk explains that in this case, that new exam is actually an old one.
Over the last decade, states have developed a slew of new standardized tests. You probably know them by their acronyms, the PSSA in Pennsylvania, DCAS in Delaware, PARC in New Jersey. These are all examples of accountability exams, tests used to determine how districts and schools are doing academically. This year, though, Delaware is one of five states turning to a more familiar set of letters, SAT.
We were very hopeful that this decision would come around.
Keisha Brinkley is principal at Appaquinimink High School in Middletown, Delaware.
And we were sitting with our fingers crossed. So when that decision came through, we were cheering.
That's right. Principals cheered when the state announced in January it would require schools to administer the SAT and then judge them on how well their students did.
I'm definitely a fan.
To understand why, you first have to meet last year's test, Smarter Balanced. It was long, about 9 hours. It took nearly a month to administer because it had to be taken on a school computer. Plus, students weren't exactly thrilled to take it.
We did tell them that this tells us what you know, and this helps us make instructional decisions. This helps us when we place you into courses.
If your eyes are glazing over right now, imagine giving that same pitch to high school juniors also studying for AP exams, finals, and college entrance tests. No surprise, then, that 1 year later, Raina Brown and Deja Lampkin from nearby Middletown High School can hardly remember what test they took or why they even took it.
I don't know. Like, they just threw it in there. They really did. It came out of nowhere, and then we just had to do it, so we just did it.
Is that the test after DCAS?
Yeah, that weird test.
And there was another issue. Lots of students boycotting Smarter Balanced. Again, Keisha Brinkley.
And this time last year, we were having the challenge of some parents wanting to opt their kids out.
Delaware was among 13 states to receive a warning from the federal government for too few kids taking state tests. About one out of every 10 high school juniors skipped Smarter Balanced last year.
And so that's a real problem.
Derek Briggs studies education assessment at the University of Colorado.
If you're using the tests in part for accountability, you have to be concerned about whether students are the ones that are taking the test. They may or may not be motivated to give their best effort. So you'd like to have the test have an incentive that's aligned to the students to perform the best.
And clearly students have plenty at stake when they take the SAT. So too do the people who make the test. By making the SAT an accountability exam, the College Board gets more paying customers, says Adam Ingersoll, a test prep expert who blogs about the testing industry.
It's a big growth opportunity, and think about too, the fact that not only is the market of all students who have to take an assessment test larger than all students who might aspire to go to a competitive four-year college, that market is also easier to sell into because rather than grinding it out with ACT, fighting for one student at a time, instead you sell it to the entire state.
The SAT is facing big pressure right now, says Ingersoll. It's been overtaken by ACT as the most popular college entrance exam, partly because ACT was already working with states to give its test in school to every student. Plus, many colleges, including the University of Delaware, have made these tests optional for applicants.
I do not believe the College Board would have undergone the transformation that it's gone through were it not for the fact that, A, they had lost so much ground to the ACT, and, B, there was this really large new marketplace opportunity to become an assessment test.
There are a lot of itches being scratched here. States get to boost their test participation rates while appeasing their test-weary principals and students. The College Board collects more revenue and evens the score with ACT. But none of this actually answers a central question. Is the SAT actually a better test than exams like Smarter Balanced? Derek Briggs from the University of Colorado isn't so sure.
There's a reason why those tests were lengthy. That reason was that the Common Core promised to get at depth of student knowledge in a way that hadn't been measured before. The drawback to tests like SAT or ACT is that they take less time, but they don't attempt to get at these higher order thinking skills.
The College Board introduced a new SAT last month that is supposed to go deeper and measure more relevant skills than past versions, but the jury is still out. All of which leaves us with a question. Is this new alliance between states and the SAT, A, a marriage of convenience, B, a cash grab by the College Board, C, a win-win that reduces the burden on overtested juniors, or D, all of the above? From the Delaware Desk, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with additional production from Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. A lot can happen in 100 days, especially if you're the mayor of Philadelphia. And tomorrow on Morning Edition, Mayor Jim Kenney joins Jennifer Lynn to reflect on his first few months in office. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.